Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show podcast. In our ongoing segments with Dr. Christian Coachman, we're bringing on some of the best thinkers in the world in dentistry to help you create a better practice and a better life. And I'm just telling you, today is going to be an amazing one. We have Dr. Maurice Salama, and we're going to be covering a lot of things, mental and physical wellness in a dental world and how balance is the key to happiness. We're going to talk about how paths came together and have gone in different directions and bringing them back today. And Christian, I would love nothing more than for you to introduce our amazing guest today.
Thank you, Kirk. It will be a pleasure. As always, we have amazing guests, but today, as you know, a special one for me. Since my career has so many key moments that involves this person right in front of me here, Dr. Maurice Salama, that became my older dental brother, but above all, an amazing mentor that had a big impact on the key moment of my life when from a dentist, Brazilian technician that was kind of on the comfort zone, decided then to do something more than just being on the comfort zone. And I can say, and we can even tell the story of how Maurice as a mentor played a key role to take the best out of me and become one of the most important persons in my professional life to allow me be here today and do what I do today. So it's a great honor and a great pleasure to be able to chat with Maurice and share his know-how and his experience, his very pragmatic view of dentistry and of finding balance between dentistry and life, and how his view may help people that are listening to us today. I hope everybody will find very interesting. So Maurice, please, first of all, thank you and give your initial welcome to everybody listening to us.
Kirk, Christian, it's a pleasure. This is kind of a very cool layout, how you do it. I'm very interested in this kind of format. I think that our paths, Christian, have crossed so often over the last 30 years. Mm-hmm. First in Brazil in the 90s with your dad, my opportunity to meet your family, and then, of course, you spending 5 years in Atlanta with us during your formative years as a technician, and then seeing you evolve and move on from us and to do all the great things that you've done. You know that we're all very, very proud of your success. I know it. You were very driven, you were very passionate, but what people don't know is that there was a time.
Yes.
You were very comfortable in your, yes, where you were. You were a young man who had a lot of free time. You made enough money. You weren't wealthy, but you made enough money to be comfortable. And you like to go and enjoy playing soccer and tennis and being out there. And dentistry was a job. And I saw something in you since we were so very close, and you were at my home a lot. And you knew my family, my wife, my kids, and my brothers and sisters, and on and on. And we spent a lot of good time. And I remember looking at you at one point and saying, I think there's more for you.
You actually asked me, Christian, so what are you going to do with your profession? And I said, I'm doing every day what I'm doing. I'm fine. And you said, no, you don't understand me. What you're going to do for real, you know, because whatever you're doing is not enough. And you got actually very serious. And I was listening to you and saying, but why are you angry with me? Because
I remember you asking me that. You said, are you angry? And I said, no.
I'm angry with you missing the opportunity.
And I said that I saw something unique. I saw something that hadn't been yet found. It was like taking the dust off and seeing what's underneath. And I realized that you had so much more in you. Mm-hmm. We just needed to figure out if you were interested and driven enough, passionate enough to be able to consider it. And, you know, it's very hard. It's a hard thing to do because you were comfortable. You were young. You were comfortable. Life was coming very easy for you. Why take that step? And maybe that's something that we, you know, our viewers have struggled with very often is, you know, I'm comfortable. I'm doing well enough. My office is running well enough. I work enough. And not wanting to grab and reach for the brass ring. And I think that that conversation, because we typically didn't have serious conversations. Christian, you and I were enjoying ourselves. And I was at a time where I had already made my decision. Mm-hmm. And I was already on a path that took me many, many long hours all over the world. I was traveling at a hectic schedule, very often leaving my family and even my practice, my patients, my staff. Traveling, lecturing, teaching, as you know, as you did later on. And I saw you, and maybe I saw the opportunity that my mentors, Ronald and David, did for me, gave me the path, the opportunity, opened doors for me to look at that as a possibility for myself, as a consultant, as a opinion leader, as an educator. And I saw with you that you had such talent that was there, that conversation I felt at that moment was a turning point. And I saw you from that moment really then ask the heavy questions. And I'll start by making it real simple. A camera and a laptop.
At that point, I didn't have none of that. What became my life, generating content and sharing stories, documenting cases and so on. But you know, I remember when I first moved, that conversation was, I stayed 5 years with you guys in Atlanta, and that conversation was exactly around 2 years plus down the road, right? When I first moved there, I was actually full of dreams, and I had a, you know, the sky was the limit. I was moving to US. At that time, people from Brazil were not moving to US to work. It was extremely hard to get work visas, and there was no known Brazilian technicians in US working at that time. Nowadays, it's a trend all over. But I came full of dreams, and then life takes over, right? And the American lifestyle kicks in, and you're having a decent life. For the first time, I had a salary that didn't depend on how much I was producing. It was a completely new feeling for me, you know? I was just checking in, checking out. Every month, the same amount of money was there, regardless of doing a little bit more or a little bit less. And I had previous 15 years very hard in Brazil, where I had to really kill myself and work like crazy. And once I started to experience that, I kind of relaxed completely. And I really got into the comfort zone, and I was fine. And I honestly felt like I would be there forever, doing exactly that same thing, you know, and all my dreams kind of disappeared and faded at that time. And that's when, you know, I always talk about the power of choosing the right mentors, because what you know, Mo, when I was invited to go to US by you guys, I had other opportunities to work in other practices. Yes. And some of them even better financial opportunities, but for some reason my intuition told me that it's not about the opportunity today or the opportunity on the first year. It's about the future. Where do you see yourself making a difference in dentistry? And that's when it was very clear, you know, Team Atlanta was the most well-known team in dentistry worldwide, and there was no doubt. I even got angry at myself why you were in doubt of even thinking about which practice to pick, right? But then again, you get into the routine, and that's the moment where I afterwards saw, thank God I picked great mentors that were able to push me at the right moments, right? And what you did and what David Garber did for me and Goldstein did, you know, was so inspiring that I said, I need to do something. Not everybody has the opportunity to be working with the best in the world, and I had that opportunity, I have a responsibility. I need to do something about it. I don't know exactly what I'm going to do, how impactful it will be, but I have to give my best, right? And I only saw that after you had that conversation with me, and everything, absolutely everything in my career happened after that day. And that brings me to my question, you know, picking the right mentors. You know, I was lucky, you know, with my father, and then every single mentor that came after him, all the way to you guys. You also had amazing mentors, as you said. So what made you pick these mentors? What was the key moment, your aha moment, your wake-up moment, where you said, this is the opportunity, these guys will help me? Why did you pick them?
You know, we have so many similarities in our paths, Christian. It's kind of almost uncanny. I will say one thing, that just to add on what you were talking about yourself, is that your biggest positive during that time with us is that you embraced the team. You enjoyed being on a team. Maybe it was your years of playing Brazilian football and soccer and being, you embraced being in a group. You embraced the different personalities. Everybody, every one of us on our team was so very different in how we looked at dentistry, how we looked at life. We were different age groups. We had four different decades being supported. So Christian, your mentors in Atlanta came from the 70s, the 60s, the 50s, and the 40s. I mean, we had quite a wide array, but we also had technicians. You know, you had guys in the lab that you can also, that you were also able to share ideas with. We were a really big team, and I believe that you enjoyed that interaction, and it allowed your mind to broaden and expand. And I think that was one of the fun things, because you brought that to us as well. You would think and then come to us with ideas, and you would challenge us and say, why can't we do this or that? So every team, as good as Team Atlanta was, you brought a different way of thinking, and you enhanced us. You know, any team that stays stagnant, static, it eventually dies. You know, we all get older. If you look at Team Atlanta today, we call Team Atlanta 2.0. We bring the next generation of people. So I think mentorship comes in phases, in waves, and also it's a you know, the timeliness of when those mentors come into your life. So for me, the first mentors would be during my education, Dr. Amsterdam, Dr. Rosenberg at the University of Pennsylvania. Those people helped to get me to be serious. I also was like you in my 20s and enjoying myself, and they saw potential, like we saw potential in you to do more than you were. I believe I was right about assessing that potential, not just me alone. It was all of us that saw it. I believe that Dr. Mort Amsterdam and Dr. Ed Rosenberg were two that saw it in me. And, you know, I was going to go off, you know, Christian, I was going to just go to New York. I grew up in New York. My family was mostly from New York. I was going to go back to New York and just work in a dental practice. I decided to solicit some of the top practices in the Northeast. And I was just going to go and be a dual specialist trained out of Penn, a real ortho specialist, implants, and just be a, you know, I hate to use the word 9-to-5 guy in a routine, in a top-notch practice. But all of a sudden, this opportunity came. And the same way that your opportunity came to be in Atlanta with us, and you decided that was the place you need to be, Ronald and David were in a world conference in Madrid and ran into one of my instructors, and they said, there's this young man coming out of the University of Pennsylvania with dual training and two specialties, and he's available. You should reach out to him. And Ronald and David did, and to my youthful haste, ignorance, I basically said, thanks, but I'm not moving to the south of the United States. I'm a northern guy. I'm going to stay in the Northeast. And the next morning at 5:30 in the morning, I got a phone call from Ed Rosenberg telling me he bought me a ticket to Atlanta, that I don't know what I'm doing. I'm dumb, stupid. And he canceled all my patients in the clinic, and that the tickets waiting for me at the ticket counter at Philadelphia Airport. And I flew to Atlanta that day, and the rest really is history. So mentors, direction, telling you that you're making a mistake or that there's more to it or you should consider something else. Those types of mentors are so valuable.
There's two factors here, Maurice. You mentioned first, making an impact on your early days in a way that made your mentor comment about you overseas when they saw an opportunity for you, right? It means that you planted some seeds in a way that mentors, that the top people wanted to help you, right? That is very, very powerful. The shortcut, right? And then the other thing you mentioned was that you had to, at one point, decide that you just don't want not just to follow, that you wanted to then create your own path, you know, even though your mentors were extremely strong.
Absolutely.
You wanted to create your space.
Yes, yes. I believe that, again, when we look at paths, first of all, I think you're right. I think your mentors are going to look for your opportunities when they see drive, passion, discipline. They're not going to do it for passivity. If you're static and not dynamic, then people have a tendency to bypass you. They look past you. They don't see you as the type of person they want to put themselves on the line to inquire about opportunities for you. So I believe that you did that in Brazil. I mean, we didn't know about you. We heard about you, right? So somebody came and said, we have this young technician from Brazil. Yeah. I believe that happened because you had those areas of drive, passion, discipline that impressed your mentors. So I think if somebody's watching this, a younger dentist, you need to find your energy. I use the word energy. You cannot think the world is going to come to you with opportunities. You're going to have to put yourself out there. You're going to have to be dynamic. You're going to not be static in your life. And those opportunities come from, you know, putting yourself out there, mingling with people. Education is maybe the biggest factor, I think. You went and got educated. Dario Dalfi, one of the best technicians in the world. I went to one of the best graduate programs in the world. So, you know, it does take drive, opportunity, education. But what happened to me, and this will change the direction of this conversation with you, is that I saw a similarity with you and I in terms of career path. I came to Atlanta, and Ronald and David were my mentors, along with my brother Henry, who joined us a few years later. Ronald and David realized that I wanted to do more than just be a clinician. I felt comfortable with my skills, but I wanted to do more. I wanted to be on the cutting edge of dentistry. I wanted to change dentistry. I wanted to create new clinical solutions for problems that I saw that were out there. And yep. With my education and with having them there, the ability to start to write articles, publications, peer-reviewed, spending the time to do clinical research, opportunities to start to be in front of other doctors and start to put together content for education. That's putting yourself out there. You start standing in front of 100 dentists, 200 dentists, and then all of a sudden, a few years later, it's 2,000 and 3,000, and we smile and laugh. But I remember that first time you and I were together, Christian, and you were in front of a few thousand dentists with me on the podium. And I remember a few sweats coming down, dripping from the eyebrow. It's putting yourself out there. It's allowing your body to be uncomfortable and deciding that you can do it. And I think through being uncomfortable builds strength, endurance, and that's not just physical. It's also mental. So we developed our psychological path, our mental path, our mental well-being. And that eventually leads to the same thing we do physically. What happened with me is that I got caught up in the drive. I was so driven that I it's almost like when the horses have blinders on, you can't see right and left. Yeah. I was so driven. My mentors were so happy with my success that I started to take on too much. I became the managing partner of a very, very large practice, as you know, with 50, 60 employees and several dentists. And on top of that, I was lecturing 45, 50 times a year, traveling 12, 15 times internationally. Every weekend was a lecture trip. And when I came to the office, it was 4 or 5 days in the clinic. And many times, as you know, which people are going to laugh, but Christian knows, we would spend 8, 9, 10, sometimes midnight treating patients. We were very busy. We were an exceptionally busy office. So I was becoming successful and allowing it to drive me in a direction to such a degree that I ignored my mental and physical well-being. And I believe this is the direction of this podcast. I've never had this discussion before publicly. I don't even know if I've had it privately. But I looked at Ronald and David lecturing, Ronald into his 80s and David into his 70s. And I realized, and they were doing it at a very significant pace still. And I realized that I didn't want my life to be about one thing. I didn't just want to be a great dentist, educator, opinion leader, consultant in the field, a publisher of content, that I needed to find balance. And I remember going to some of my mentors and explaining this to them. And I got some pushback, to be perfectly honest. They were like, oh, no, you love it too much. Mm-hmm. You're too successful. You'll get bored. You know, you're either in it or you're out of it. You've heard that comment, I'm sure.
Your ego needs it.
Yes, we need to be acknowledged. You're going to need to have the taps on the back that you're really, and also that you can't do it halfway because the profession won't allow it. Your audience won't allow it. You'll be forgotten. And you know, listen, I got to tell you, you get a little bit nervous. Here are these mentors who have helped you in this path. And when I say helped, I mean the same way for you. When I tell people what we did for you, we simply showed you a direction. And we maybe opened a door just enough to see light. Christian, what you've done is you opened the door and you ran through it. I believe all you can ever ask for from your mentors is direction and just a little bit of light in the doorway. I believe we did that for you. When I saw you several years after you left us, I was both happy for you and sad at the same time. You were so busy. You were so driven, so passionate, and you saw opportunity that you were traveling, when you told me, a few hundred days out of the year. I was with you in Brazil. Yeah. I came to you, it was during Christmas time, just a week or before Christmas, I believe. And I saw you and I said, Christian, I'm so proud of you, but I think you're going to have to start to think of yourself, your well-being, your emotional, psychological, physical well-being, because traveling at that rate is not something you're going or should maintain for an extended period of time. So we almost found it at the same time. I wish I had a Maurice Salama to come to me 10 years earlier, like I came to you. But
it took me a few years, huh? For me, it really, you said you saw that and you made the change before COVID. I only did it after COVID, you know. Mm-hmm. I was full power, and my mental and physical health were really going down very fast. You know, people seeing me in 19, they were like, what is happening with you? You have a problem and you don't know.
it's a tough pill to swallow, isn't it? Yep. Here you are, and I say it, a relatively young, handsome, intelligent, successful person running full speed, and somebody looks at you and tells you that maybe you shouldn't be doing that at the same speed. There's something not looking right. And the whole idea of this discussion was you need to strike a balance. I don't believe this is only for educators and speakers. I think that every person that owns or runs an office or works in an office, you're going to struggle with balance between how many hours you spend doing dentistry. Dentistry is a very, very difficult profession, physically, mentally. You have patients typically come to you because they're unhappy or they're in pain. So you're dealing with negativity. You have staff that come and go. You have some people who aren't working as hard as you are. And then, of course, the physical tax on your body, dentistry with turning your head over the patient, twisting your back. You know, dentists have a higher likelihood of lower back, neck, and emotional health issues than any other profession in the world. So you're dealing with all these things at the same time. And I think what happened to me is I looked at my mentors. They helped me by showing me the part of it, their path that I didn't want. And I had that discussion with Dave and Ronald saying, I'm not going to do it to the same extent. Now, having said that, here's where the good information comes. Mm-hmm. You and I didn't disappear. Yeah. We didn't choose that we're going to go from 100 miles per hour to zero. Yeah. So the stories of my yes.
So it's doing less and getting the most of each moment. That's something that I want to I think we should mention, because strategically slowing down can generate a lot of value. People talk about scarcity and not overexposure of yourself and filtering and curating the best opportunities. You know, as a speaker, the problem is that you come from a moment for many, many years where nobody wants to pay you at all, right? At the beginning. Yeah. And then you start to get paid a little bit, and you feel proud about that a little bit. And then you start getting decent pay to speak, and then you don't want to miss, you don't know how to say no, because everything is yes, because, oh my God, you know, that's a decent amount of money. And it's very hard to make the movement, that is probably what you're saying, where you bet on the process of scarcity. And you say, I'm going to multiply my value here, and there's no guarantee, I'm going to take the risks, and I'm going to step back.
Yes.
And let's see what happens.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly how you said it. Listen, the reality is, it could be the same. There was time, and you know it, Christian. I'm going to tell you, I'm telling everybody a story. We were so busy before the Lehman Brothers, the Great Recession in 2009. We were so busy in the office. Christian was busy in the lab with us. We were doing amazing cases, and we were publishing and writing, and the fever was hot. It was just what a time it was in our office. We had some great technicians. We had Christian's mate, Guy Cabral, who was with us in the lab. We had Pincus Adarp helping us out from time to time. So we had such great, what a team we had. And we were flying, and we were producing several million dollars of dentistry in our office. So mm-hmm. for those of you out there doing dentistry, we were as busy as we can be. And there were patients that would come in and say, well, I can't wait. I don't want to wait 3 months, 4 months to get on the book. I want to have it done before the holidays. You're going to need to open up a day. And we, as Christian said, you start looking at every single, and I hate to use this term because it's not the way I perceive myself at all. But you start looking at patients as opportunities to make another money, off the box. Here's money that's going to walk out the door. They're not going to wait for you. So we opened up a Saturday. We never worked on a Saturday. We opened up a Saturday. We asked Christian to
you
come.
You always in. Worked on Saturdays, but lecturing.
Yes, that's correct. We always worked on Saturday, but we were usually somewhere abroad or in
and
somewhere.
And people think it's not working, and it's extremely stressful.
That's correct. You're correct, Christian. We were typically not having many free weekends. But it was the Saturday that was available, and we squeezed the patient in to do a full mouth reconstruction. And we needed everyone there, me, David, you, the staff. And, you know, it's the excitement, the success. You start to then ignore your the ability for you to rest.
Let's see if you agree with me, Mo, because I do believe, and sometimes I even talk that balance is overrated. It's kind of maybe conflicting a little bit with what we are saying, but it's actually not. Is that when you have that type of environment where the work is feeding you energy instead of you giving energy to the work, and the excitement is so real, motivation is so big, and you're having so much fun, right? And we are just 110% in it. I think it's great. It's great for your mind. It's great for your body. But you need to have the sensitivity or sensibility to feel the moment that is about to become a routine.
Christian, it's a drug.
Listen, huh?
It's a drug. It's a drug.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I see Kirk here. It's a drug. We were in that room working for 10 hours on a Saturday. We weren't with our families. We weren't enjoying the sunlight. We weren't having a pina colada on the beach. We weren't fishing, golfing, or playing tennis. And we had already worked 5 days that week. Yeah. It's the drug. I'm trying to explain to anybody who's watching, any amount of success can become intoxicating. Like a drink, like a drug. So it's hard when you're in it. What you're saying is, yes, I agree with it. That excitement, that enthusiasm is like, you know, it's a ball of fire, but it's hard to control. So you must be able to step back from that and to instill, I hate to use the word rules because I'm somebody who's not a big rule person, but you got to start to give yourselves guidelines. Mm-hmm. You have to have a barometer. You have to have some, you know, when you go bowling with little kids, they put those things in the gutter, right? Guardrails. We need guardrails. And sometimes you don't see it yourself. So it's really important maybe to have people around you understand where you're trying to go. But having said that, I will say, do I miss those moments of camaraderie and excitement, enthusiasm, doing the work? Oh, absolutely. There was nothing like it. But do I think it was in my best long-term psychological, emotional, physical well-being? No, it was not. No. I had to suffer on the other side in order to enjoy that part of it. And that's why this whole conversation of balance. For those out there, listen. There has to come a point where you increase your productivity. What Christian's saying is correct. Be able to create the team that allows you to be most productive without having to do it at a point where you suffer from overexertion. We've seen a lot of colleagues of ours, Christian, we know them by name, burnout.
Yes, very common.
Lecturers, there's been clinicians. You know, not everybody's a lecturer. Some people have great offices, very successful business people in dentistry. But
very common among our friends. Yeah.
And I've seen people say, "Hey, you know what? I've stopped. I canceled all my lectures. I moved out of my town."
Because if it takes too much time for you to detect, and we were able to detect not too late, but what happens is that when it's a little bit too late, the measures need to be drastic, and you see people just quitting. Yeah. They cannot even do it in a balanced way, you know?
Yeah, they just
it's like
they
drinking.
Stop. They go 100 miles per hour to zero. And that's why I say, if you've seen me, and Christian, you and I, again, we've stayed connected and we've been friends for so long, and that's never going to change, and that's wonderful. But you saw me slow down. Mm-hmm. I think the whole world did. The you know, maybe the story of my great demise is overrated. It's not what I did. I simply slowed down. When you're on a plane and it's landing, the plane doesn't go from 600 miles per hour to zero. It comes in, it comes down low, and it slows down, and then it goes on the runway, and it slows down.
Smooth.
It's a very long runway for a big plane. You need a runway that's at least a few miles long. So there's no reason to stop like that. Nothing that stops abruptly is ever good for you, whether it's physical or whether it's mental. So what you really need to do is say, here, you need to decide, be selective. I use the words like, first of all, put in, and I learned this from you because I watch out what you've done. You have surrounded, first of all, surround yourself with like-minded people, with a great team. You've done that. You've helped train that team, and you've put in your protocols, and you have done that. And I, as you know most of my team, so I've had them with me for 30 years. And I brought in my niece, who's a periodontist and implantologist in my practice. I brought in a bunch of young, like-minded clinicians to be the next iteration of Team Atlanta. Marco Tadros and a few Brazilians. You know, we love to surround ourselves with Brazilians. Maria Piranhas and Marcelo have also been a big part of us. We've always had great technicians. So the team changes. We brought in some youth. Now, you know, Ronald and David are retired. And I'm able to do the cases that I wish to do. My fees are a little higher, more selective with the cases I take. When patients say, well, I only want to see you, you have to add a day. I don't. And when I'm invited to speak where I don't think it's going to have a very big impact, it's not, believe me, it's not about the money. Any money that I make now is not going to change my life. When you get to this position in your life, I wish you all to understand that, because money by itself at some point does not define who you are. It's not going to make you happier. You just need enough to live your lifestyle, and I have that. So I don't make my decisions anymore on how much I get paid. And that's whether it's patients. I'm still in the practice, but I've limited my days a month. And I still lecture, but I limit it to where I want to go and who I want to do it with. And here is where I'm going to make a big point for me as an educator. I, over the years, have had an incredible opportunity to meet people that I saw and helped, you know, get them on the map. There's quite a few of them. I believe I've been very open and supportive of new doctors and younger doctors. It's not about an ego for me. I don't need to be the greatest in the world or to tell my ego or to tap myself on the shoulder. I think I'm a very competent, talented, and educated clinical provider, but there are some incredibly talented people out there. And I don't just go for talent, I go for human beings. So I was able to now educate the way I want to. What does that mean? I take the lectures I want in the places that I want to go and where I'll have the greatest impact on the audience. And I also educate now with the colleagues that I want to educate with. I started a Salama training center here in the United States. I also now have it in Europe. We're now on our second year of the six modules being done by some of the clinicians I selected, which are great and dear friends and amazing educators. And we have it now in Europe. So it's great to be able to do that and not have it all on my shoulders. I used to do all six modules by myself. Now I get to share that with some of the best educators in the world, and doing that now in Croatia, Romania, and now Istanbul. So I work with Ramon Gomez Meda. I work with Luis Besa. I work with Nazari Malacek. I work with Snezana Pol. I work with the Agnini brothers, who I know you know very, very well. Yeah. And being able to tap on those colleagues that are so talented, but I call incredibly dear and close friends, like-minded individuals, teach in a similar way to me, that they are approachable, that they—
Continuation of you.
They're continuing. They're an extension of me. Mm-hmm. And now when I get invited to do these bigger conferences, and obviously Dental XP, but also these conferences that call me and say, I'd like you to come and lecture, and I want you to be a scientific chair. I instruct them that if I'm going to do it, I want to be able to have the liberty and the freedom to do the programs the way I want to do them. I think I have earned that right. And if they want me for that role, I am now able to invite like-minded educators, and it becomes fun because there's a brotherhood, sisterhood, a social interaction. We get to enjoy one another, and we get to share information in a similar manner. And I'm right now, I'm at the most fun, most least stressful part of my educational consulting part of my career. I get to do it when I want to do it, at the pace I want to do it, with the friends I want to do it with, and do it at the very top of the game. Well, I never want to shortchange the audience. I never want to bring my level down. But if I can leave it at the top, or even enhance it by having others that have been part of this journey with me, who want to do it with me, and I can get their assistance, then that's been great. And you have always been one of those people, Christian. Obviously, when I call you, you're always there to answer. And for people that don't know it, as amazing an educator, and I think Christian's one of the most talented orators and speakers in the world. He's certainly taken it seriously. And when you think about the fact that he's lecturing in a second language, he's always there to answer my phone call. He's always there when I need assistance, or when I ask him to be part of these programs. He always does the best he can to assist me and participate. And it is a good opportunity for me to thank him. Mm-hmm. So for those, if I had to give one area of what I say is, you know, advice for you out there, find some balance. But a big part of that balance now comes with what, Christian? Exercise.
let me just summarize what we just talked here. You were talking about slowing down, but in a smart way.
Yes.
And we talked about slowing down in a smart way as a practice owner and as a speaker. These are two different strategies.
Yes.
You mentioned that slowing down as a practice owner means building an amazing team, empowering, choosing the right associates, empowering the right associates. So mastering the process of recruiting people and training people, motivating people, and making your home become their home, right?
Yeah.
Making them speak on your behalf with patients and team, and have them being an extension of you, a continuation of you in the practice. And you guys did it with me in the lab at that time, that I really felt that the lab was, I was part of the lab, and I could have the freedom to manage the lab and build the lab and grow the lab and things like that. And nowadays with the clinicians that are Team Atlanta 2.0. And on the speaker side, you mentioned about choosing according to the impact and not according to the money, right?
Yes.
And that, you know, brings me to the branding side. You know, if you're able to create a brand of you, if you become a brand as an educator, and you invest on your brand, and you polish your brand, and you really respect your brand, and I say respect your own brand means behaving properly all the time according to your brand, in a way that you create a reputation. That is, for me, the key for you to be able to lecture less and be even more profitable lecturing, but leave a bigger legacy as a speaker, and, you know, and have more fun instead of just being every Friday somewhere else, you know. So if you have any suggestion about specifically how to find the right associates and how to empower them, and if you have any advice on how to improve your brand as an educator to choose the opportunities that will generate the best impact.
Yeah, I think those are good questions. I think the key was selectivity. You have to be really selective. You're correct. Everything that you said, you nailed it. I think that in my office, I brought in talented people to follow the ones that were leaving, because listen, there's no Ronald Goldstein, David Garber, and there's not many Christian Coachmans out there. And when you lose people like that in your team, it's not like you can snap your fingers and find replacements. So it's never going to be equal. But you know, you have people with potential, and you're looking for drive, and you're looking for like-mindedness. I see so many people bring doctors into their office for the wrong reasons, and then they're either upset about it or they feel threatened. Oh, this new doctor is taking some of my patients and now I'm not making as much money. And the best thing you can do is find an associate. If you're a young doctor or maybe in middle of your career and you're looking for an associate, find somebody who thinks and acts like you do, and promote them, because it's only going to enhance your office and you're going to build a bigger practice in that way. When you start to feel threatened by that person or they're not like-minded, it ends up being a lot of friction. It's not good for the staff. So the first thing I would say to you is you got to pick and be very careful about interviewing these people. Speak to their colleagues, speak to their faculty that have worked with them. And if they're in school, the best way for us, we always went to the university and spoke to the faculty members and the their mentors. With many of ours, we got them through Gerard Sheesh, and we did it through Medical College of Georgia. And even Maria Peranos, we obviously, we knew some of the work that she did over at USC, and she was working with some of the colleagues that we knew. And these people came with great credentials. They were very similar to us. You know, we're an office, believe it or not, Team Atlanta, as funny as it may be, you know, Team Atlanta USA, and everybody in our office, except for Dr. Goldstein, was born in another country. So we're a melting pot. We have Egyptian, Brazilian, we have South African, we have Korean. It doesn't have to be a local. For us, we looked for the best individual that came with good training and came with a good mindset that was similar to ours, that we, so we didn't have to change their mindset. And I believe that that's critical to finding good people in your office. The second thing is, I think you really need to find good team members. Your staff, your associates are important, but so is your staff. Get good staff members. And don't consider the extra dollar that you may, if they ask for a raise, it's worth it. Keep the good ones. And as far as from an educational standpoint, I think that getting into the field, the easiest way is to go to meetings. Put yourself out there, go to the meetings. If I don't believe, and I'm it's going to sound like I'm touting myself, but I'm going to say right now, Dental XP has been a conduit for speakers who otherwise would have never gotten an opportunity to speak on a big stage. We were not only a digital stage, we were a real stage. It was a reality show. You couldn't do that with some of the big organizations. They would never let a generic or general dentist who had skill get an opportunity if they didn't publish papers, if they weren't part-time faculties, if they haven't done it by writing books. Some of the big organizations are sort of reluctant to give these dentists opportunity. And I think Dental XP was an enormous conduit for some of this young talent, because I'll tell you right now, And they'll probably tell you the truth. People like Howie Gluckman, Ramon Gomez, Luis Bessa, Snezana Pol, who are now lecturing all over the world and in the United States, started at Dental XP. No one knew them in the entire world. We gave them because they deserved it. They earned it. They were talented and they earned an opportunity at an audience. And when they got it, they made the most of it. And I'm so proud of what we've done with Dental XP from that standpoint. And again, it has, to me, has nothing to do with self-aggrandizement. I believe that we are and always have been what we call hashtag always inclusive. Dental XP was always inclusive. We wanted the people that may not have been accepted at other organizations. We wanted those people who had drive and passion. And when we could help them to become speakers, we did. So maybe the biggest advice would be go to meetings, like-minded people, find the paths, some organizations make it easier than others. But I can tell you that usually those speakers that are at those meetings typically will give you some advice, show them your cases, create a digital correspondence, a digital mentor, if you wish. Send them your cases, say, hey, what do you think? Get some advice, get involved with if there's a local university, because at the local university level, they always want their graduates to have opportunities to be educated. And you start by doing those programs, local study clubs, local university courses, and then eventually you'll get your opportunities in the bigger meetings and make the most of it. I would say
that another suggestion is more or less what I did is that just choose some mentors and help them improve their lecture. Work for them. Successful people are busy. They don't have time. And putting lectures together is so difficult, right? That a younger person may bring new ways, new technologies, new layouts, new designs, new storylines, new perspective on the same topics. And you become an assistant, a lecture building assistant, right? And you start to get experience, learn, and naturally these mentors will start to say, you know what, this is almost 50% yours. You should go ahead and give this lecture yourself, and I will bring you with me here and there, and we can lecture together, and suddenly you are by yourself on a big stage.
I carry David Garber's slide carousel bags and his computer. So I not only helped him with his lectures, I carried his equipment.
Mm-hmm.
You know that you helped me and David with our lectures. Luckily for you, we were already fully digital, so we didn't have to carry our laptops.
Yes.
So you're correct, Christian. I believe that that's exactly a great additional way to do it. Find somebody that you are passionate about, that's a mentor that you want to follow, help them out, and then eventually that mentor will give you an opportunity or assist you. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. And one of the things I love this. I feel like the huge beneficiary of some great information. Just on that note, another thing about being a speaker is you see these people and you want to know that they're serious about learning. So I did this. I actually, when I was nobody, I still am, I actually wrote up notes of a great speaker and then I typed them up and sent them to the speaker to let them know.
Amazing.
I'm serious. Like I'm not just somebody who's trying to ride the train here. Like I'm a serious student. And the speaker was like, I said that? I'm like, I wrote everything you said during that time. So you're right. Add value to the person that you hope will bring value to you someday. It's great stuff.
Absolutely. 100%. Absolutely. And listen, part of this whole thing is also physical. So now you're creating time, right? So if I go in the office, and this is actually what happened, Christian's correct. I was working when Christian was there. It was unusual. I'm going to just put it out there, and Christian, you can tell me if I'm exaggerating. It was unusual that I got home before 8 o'clock at night. It was unusual. If I was in the clinic, we were there till 8 o'clock at night. we had to make sure Christian didn't go to play tennis because a lot of times he was seating the temporary with us. And we had to go find
him. Before that conversation we had, yes.
Two times a day. That's right. And then, and that's why I've never beaten Christian at tennis. And so, but that's okay. He's also much younger than I. But one of the things is that I think that we became more productive. So in this, now I hardly ever leave my office later than 5:30. So I'm no longer working till 8. I have dinner with my family. You know, people may say, what's the big deal? But I have dinner with my family. I may have once a week, I go out with some of the people in the office or a friend. I have time for that. I have time for that emotional and psychological stimulation and conversation with colleagues and friends and family. And then in the morning, I would start my day about an hour later than I did when Christian was there, so that I can now get my exercise in the morning. Whatever that may be, whether it be an activity like tennis or running, or whether it be just simply cycling on the on my bicycle in the house, or lifting weights. Whether you want to go to a gym or you have an in-house, in your house, you may have a gym to work out with. I have a gym. Christian, last time he was in Atlanta, worked out with me. It's a small little gym. We had a great time, but
more than enough,
you know, and, you know, it's an amazing thing. What happens, you release endorphins, you release stress, you're telling your body that it's important to maintain a good posture, core strength, muscle. Building muscle is good for mental health. So I can honestly say that I went through periods up and down. Christian may know, I used to do P90X, I think, when he was there. And then as soon as Christian left, I got injured, and then I stopped exercising. And then, you know, I started getting too involved in the office and teaching and running around, and that I really neglected my physical well-being. I gained weight, my blood work suffered, cholesterol levels, my diet suffered, my psychological well-being suffered. And so now here comes the balance. The balance is this: find an opportunity to exercise. I don't know whether it's earlier in the day or later in the day, whatever suits you, but do something of an activity. I think resistance training is very important. I think that core and flexibility training, don't do the same thing all week long. Dentistry is real tough on the body and the spine. Be kind to your body. I would tell you that right now, at my age, 60, I'm the strongest I have ever been. You can do it late in life. I had the opportunity of training with Christian several months ago, and I can tell you that we had a great workout together. And after we worked out for an hour with resistance training, we went on to the tennis courts for another hour. And it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing to share it with others. If you have a colleague that wants to do it with you, that's great. But do it. It's so important. Make it part of your schedule. Schedule it in. Make it an important part of you. Don't be broke. I'll schedule during. I have a patient wants to come in. I won't work out this today. Don't do it. And then second, you don't have to eat everything at the buffet. If you're getting patients and all of a sudden your book is full and there's a case that came in, the patient will wait for you. And if they can't wait for you, then give it to an associate. Don't neglect yourself or put so much on yourself that it becomes taxing to you from a physical and emotional standpoint. I think it's one of the biggest pieces of advice I can give you. That's why you need a great team and bring in good people into your practice, because that way you feel comfortable to share, and I use the word share, in the success of the practice. And by the way, one of the greatest things about having a team, for those of you who don't or are still working on it, is that you share. It's great to share in the success. And by the way, you know, Christian, when he was in our office, we had a lot of success. But I think equally important, maybe more important, Christian, we shared in the failures. When things didn't go well, the worst thing in the world is being there by yourself and having to first figure out what you did wrong or what were the mistakes, and then having to own up to it, and then having to find a solution. That's incredibly taxing. And I would always tell, you know, my colleagues that one failure is equal to 10 successes. So when you get a failure, you drive home with it, you sleep, it bothers you at night when you're sleeping, it bothers your staff, it will drive you crazy until you can figure something out. And we really utilized each other. We leaned on each other and say, Christian, what do you think we can do here to recover from the failure? We would talk to David and Ronald and Henry and all the other doctors in the office. And we'd even use staff. What do you think? What tools do we not consider? And sharing the failures was more important to me than even the joy of sharing in the success. As Christian said, it was a drug, but it was an amazing one. And we had so much success, we would get caught up in it. So my advice for those watching is be careful. Don't get so caught up in it that you don't realize that you're doing this.
Going down.
You're going down. You're doing it too much of it. And they're gonna say too much of anything is no good for you. So find some balance, physical balance, emotional balance, time with your family, time for meals. No, don't travel every single weekend because people are inviting you to lecture. Don't take every single patient. Find balance. Find an opportunity to realize that you are better off. Less is best. And I think that if you find that path, you would have learned it way before I did. I'm glad that I started my process probably in my 50s. And I'm glad that I have opportunity now to enjoy the benefits of it. I believe, a still young age. I feel, like I said, maybe better now at 60 than I even did at 50.
Yeah. Gentlemen, this has been gold. And I want to keep you all day. I have so many other questions, but we could easily make this 2 hours. this has been brilliant. And in so many ways, you've already summarized it, but I'm going to ask both of you. Maurice, I want you to go first. Give us some final thoughts on how important this is. And if I'm a 32-year-old dentist listening, what would you want to say to that person? And Christian, I'd love to hear the same from you.
From a guy who got to the point where he ended up needing surgery on his neck and injections in his back, I would tell you, I wish I would have known at 32. No one told me. No one teaches you that. Everybody only wants to teach you how to make money and how to be as busy as you can. That's all I learned when I was 30. So I believe you're now having that same 30-year-old look back at his career at 60 and tell you, it's best be kind to your spine. Be good to yourself. Find time for your psychological and physical well-being. Train yourself. Make sure that you have the right people. Be flexible. Add flexibility training. And really realize that it's not a race. It is a marathon, and that you should pace yourself.
That's Christian. It? Yes, your thoughts.
Yeah, you know, I had a very special year that I just recently ended with my 50th birthday, where I decided to put myself into an adventure or a challenge. And I thought I was kind of healthy. I thought I was okay. But as I mentioned, many people close to me looking at me were seeing in my face that I was starting a process that was not good, of neglecting myself mental and physically. And thank God for some kind of reason. And that's the strength that you need to find on yourself. Nobody will do it for you. People will tell you, oh, you need to be healthy. That's obvious. You need to exercise. That's obvious. And that doesn't change behavior, right? You need to find it in yourself, find the strength in yourself, and have that aha moment where you decide to do something very simple, you know, build a healthy routine. For me, the biggest lesson of my last year from 49 to 50, when I decided, when I turned 49, that was my aha moment. For some reason, the day of my 49th, I really stopped and started to think, you know, there's 365 days for me to complete half a century. Since I love history and I always liked to study history, you know, half a century is a lot of time, and that's it. I'm a half century old. And there is a possibility that I will have less years ahead of me than behind me. Of course, that can happen at any moment, but 50 makes, it's a very strong number, right? So I decided to wake up at 49 and created a challenge. So finding a way to challenge yourself, you know, and create a like a game with yourself. You say, I'm gonna do this. Or I'm going to do that, you know, and this is the rule. And you're speaking to yourself because there's absolutely nobody involved, right? You're not competing. You're not showing off. It's just you and yourself. And find some tricks to be, how can you say, what is the word in English? To be compliant or to be committed to it. You know, you need to find mental tricks. Because, of course, as we know, we will always find a way to skip something that we know it's better for us. So I was able to find those tricks, play those games with myself, and I decided that I was going to exercise 365 days nonstop. And the first thing I did to start playing these mental tricks with myself was two things. I said, I'm going to post every single day. That means that my followers will start seeing it and will start either betting on me or betting against me, right? And another thing that I did was to tell my closest friends about this. And everybody, of course, thought I was completely insane and crazy. And they started to bet how many days I would last. Some 7 days, some 5 days. Some thought that I would make to 20 days. And I have to tell you, that's my personality. That's another thing. You need to know yourself because then you know your personality and you know the things that will trigger you. And when somebody tells me, Christian, you're not going to make it, that's when I'm like, yes, I'm going to make it. It may work for you or you may find other ways, you know, to trigger that strength inside of you so you don't break your promise to yourself.
One of my triggers was watching you do it. So thank I can you. Tell you that you, the fact that you shared your journey with the world, I can tell you, I believe I watched you for 365 days. I would comment on you. I would give you
I remember.
Picture.
You were among the few. You know, it was amazing because I would, Maurice, last year, on the second half of the year, every Congress that I would go, people would not talk about dentistry to me, neither DSD. They would come to me and say, don't quit. Keep going. I'm watching. And this is fun. And I'm getting motivated as well. And it was amazing. It was amazing. So, of course.
That's for sure. You did.
And you need to find your story. You need to find your reasons to do that. And then promise yourself dearly. And don't cheat on yourself. You know, don't cheat on yourself. You know, don't make anything too crazy because then you're not going to be able to do it. And you're going to be so sad and hard on yourself. So create a challenge that is easy enough that you consciously and rationally can tell yourself, I can do this. It is possible. It needs to be that simple and that easy. And don't mess up. Just do it.
Yeah. So well said, gentlemen. This has been incredible. So if you're listening to this, I hope you're taking notes. I got 2 pages of notes. This is so great. I cannot thank you guys enough. And I, you know, Christian, nobody thinks you're crazy. I would echo Maurice's comments. I very inspired. I've never played tennis, but now I want to play tennis. I don't know. It's it might be fun. So, and then when you say 50 is a strong number, it is, you know, I think we can all agree we're officially playing the back nine of this golf course in life. And you have to make better decisions on the back. Back nine is different. You know, time is the new rich. And I think, you know, Maurice, this has been so helpful. I'll speak for myself. You know, a lot of the deep subjective pain that we all feel as professionals, we can't always put a finger on it. But today you gave some great insight. And Christian, you did too, to what, how do we unlock that with some happiness? So thank you guys so much for today. I really appreciate you.
Thanks, Kirk.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Mo. See you around.
Christian, yeah. Thanks so much, buddy. Next time I see you, make sure you bring your tennis racket.
Always.
You got it.
It's good stuff. Well, stick around, Maurice, before we hang up. I want to say goodbye. Stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. But thank you guys for listening to the Best Practices Show and Coffee with Coachman. Hey, hope you guys enjoyed this. If you did, do us a favor. Just hit the share button. Share this with your friends. I love how this is growing. We're going to keep bringing it with great minds. So keep sticking around. And until you hear from us again or you see us again, keep watching or keep listening to the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy your day. So there you have it. Another great episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Hey, and thank you for showing up. I just want to thank you for being here and sharing the good word with your friends. And if you're really enjoying the podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go to wherever you consume the podcast and just give us a 4 or 5 star review? Here's what that does. It allows us to find other great people like you. I love this profession so much. I'm going to spend the rest of my professional life finding great information so that you can consume it and your friends can consume it so that you can create a better practice and a better life. So keep spreading the word and we will see you guys soon. Have a great day, everybody.